Take over target. He's under pressure at the moment. Then Augusta Proud. I Am Invincible 2 in front. Take over target after him now from Augusta Proud. Flying Phoenix. I Am Invincible in front. Take over target. Went up on the outside. 8 Group 1 wins. $6 million. A true champion. Take over target.
And 13 years ago, a lot of water's gone under the bridge since then. That was Hilton Donaldson calling Take Over Target, winning the Goodwood in 2009. What an extraordinary horse. We did speak to Jay Ford this morning about his memories of Takeover Target, and we've managed to get hold of Ben Janiak, the son of Joe Janiak, who was very much part of this journey. How are you, Ben?
Morning, mate. How are you?
Not too bad. Hey, Doomben washed out today. I know you're at the Gold Coast. Is it a little bit wet underfoot?
Mate, it's been absolutely disgraceful up here at the moment. just been relentless, mate. Every time we think it's sort of disappeared, mate, it just pops back up again.
It is relentless. So stick it out, mate. Well, I'm going to ask you about your life up on the Gold Coast. I know that you've rekindled the trainer's license too, so that's going to be an interesting chat as well. Hey, you're with Dan Malecki, me, Matt Stewart and Sean Cosgrove. And Ben, Sean has got a lovely story about your old man. So let's just set the scene for this chat with this little story, Cosy.
Yeah, now, Ben, you've probably heard this many times before from your dad, but I caught up with him with Jimmy Jarvis one night about 5 years ago. And your dad was telling me about the time he was at Royal Ascot and an equerry came down and said, you've been invited to go to the Royal Box to watch a race with Her Majesty. Joe thought that'd be pretty good. So he went up and he said they're going to watch a 1,000-metre three-year-old fillies race and have a cup of tea and cucumber sangers with the Queen. And one filly jacked up wouldn't go in. And the Queen led across. She said, you know, I think if they led that filly back and walked it around, it'd probably go in. And he said it was almost like they heard her. They took it back, walked it around, took it in. Joe leaned across, he said, you know what, you'd make a pretty fair racehorse trainer. And she leaned back, she said, hey, mate, they don't want to give up my day job.
were you part of that little cucumber sandwich day at Royal Ascot, Ben?
Mate, yeah, I was there, and, mate, you've nailed the story, mate. That's actually spot on. But I was actually down with the horse that day, so I didn't have the privilege to be up in the Royal Box with Dad.
He said his description was, he said she was a great old bird.
her racing knowledge is second to none. You know, been in the industry a whole life, so.
Yeah, well, you're talking racing royalty with the Queen there, but as far as the equine royalty is concerned, Takeover Target was just it, Ben. I mean, like when you reflect back now, 13 years ago, and nearly every feature sprint race that's on in Australia, he's won, let alone all the international races that he won. Does it become, in a way, more special, that memory of what, you know, you went through with Takeover Target? Because it's not that long ago, but it's long enough ago.
Yeah, I think we probably appreciate a little bit more now what we've done. You know, everybody says, you know, what a ride, and geez, you would have had a blast. And look, don't get me wrong, you know, there was no shortage of good times. But when you've got a horse that's racing at the elite level, and also a horse like him that the public falls in love with, you not only, you know, have that pressure to not only win, but also to, you know, keep the horse in one piece and nothing happened to him. You know, it's no secret that he wasn't the most soundest horse going around. So it was, quite remarkable when you look back now.
Take us back to the start, like to your start with him and your dad, Joe's start. I mean, obviously there was the backstory with, I think it was John Morrish and so on. He's actually a very well-bred horse. But your involvement and your first impression that the horse may be something a little bit special beyond expectation. I mean, you paid something like $1,200, so there was never going to be any expectation. But tell us about the first time that you thought, wow, this is a cheap horse at $1,200.
Yeah, well, probably the first time we put the clock on him at Queanbeyan. You know, obviously we had to check the clock a couple of times to make sure, you know, the battery wasn't flat. But it's, you know, we knew he was something that we'd never seen before. But I couldn't say that we thought that he would get to where he got to. You know what I mean? It was just, it was a progressive thing. And the more we got the hang of how we need to be trained and the care that he needed to be given, you know, things just evolved.
Was he easy to train?
From a standpoint, you know, he was a very kind horse. He had a few little vices early days, but he had terrible soundness issues. He was a constant patch-up job, and I think the situation that me and my father were in at the time, that we didn't have a stable full of horses, and when he sort of got to that level that needed that 24-hour care, and we were with him all the time. It was a recipe for success for that horse.
Ben, just mentioning that, the soundness issues, but every photo I look at him, there's not one bit of tape on him. No bandages.
Yeah, he did have his front joints taped up a couple of starts. But basically, his main issue was his knees and also across his back. They were the sort of issues that sort of kept recurring that we sort of, you know, had to sort of work on and keep intact.
And he took you across the world, and with all the little bits and pieces over a number of years, there it's not just Australia that became, caught up with the takeover target, the hype, and the brilliance, the outstanding ability. But hasn't it got the makeup of being a movie? Can't you see this?
Well, it starts in a caravan park in Queanbeyan, doesn't it, Ben? It's not a bad starting point for a romance, is it?
Yeah, look, it's been thrown around a little bit. There was one guy that was half serious that sort of approached us when we were at Ascot one year. I think it might have been the second trip at Ascot, but that sort of didn't eventuate. And I think what it comes down to, it's a big money thing, and trying to get an investor not only maybe doesn't need a return, but has that passion for horses to put that type of money into, you know, such a big budget project. But there is possibly a really good documentary in the making at the moment. We're just trying to go through funding, and possibly you might see that in sort of 12 to 18 months.
Ah, that'd be fantastic. Kay, tell us about the Royal Ascot experiences, other than your relationship between your father and the Queen. So, first time around, and this is what we discussed with Jay Ford earlier this morning, first time around, he wasn't quite the megastar hero, but the more he returned to Royal Ascot, the more he became part of the fabric of Royal Ascot. So, tell us about how the whole thing evolved over multiple journeys to Royal Ascot.
Yeah, obviously, his race record was good the first trip over there, but not only when we got out of there, sort of nobody really knew about him, but obviously coming from the Australian winter over into their summer, the horse's coat didn't turn at all. And, parade him at Royal Ascot there, and all them horses look $1 million, and this horse we've rocked up from a small country town in Australia over to Royal Ascot, and he's got a coat on him 2 inches long. The horse looked terrible.
And he was a dumpy-looking horse at the best of times, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was, short, stocky build. Wasn't a real flashy-looking horse, but plenty of strength and power.
We had a chat with Jay Ford earlier this morning, Ben, and I think, you know, when you rekindle those moments, those special moments in the horse's career, and probably even rank them alongside the horses today, even with the new races that are about, like the Everest. I mean, could you imagine takeover target in an Everest, or even...
Don't rub it in.
No. But, I mean, he's gone all the way around the world to win these big races. Yeah. He didn't have those opportunities, you know, a couple of those. I don't even think the Winterbottom was a Group 1 when he won it, but imagine the Everest almost in your backyard, in a sense, in Sydney. If he could go to Royal Ascot 3 years in a row, there's a good chance, Ben, he could have won a few Everests.
Yeah, well, I mean, with a horse of that ability, you know, anything was possible. I suppose the Everest has probably replaced the TJ at the moment, and obviously, you know, he was good enough to win a TJ, and I think the year he won that, I think there were 6 individual Group 1 winners in the race. And when you said about the Winterbottom, and also when he won the King's Stand over in England, it was a Group 2 at the time. So, you know, potentially that horse should have been a 10-time Group 1 winner.
Ben, what was the reaction like from the other trainers and owners when you went there and he looked like a golden retriever with the hair on him and you've come out and toweled him? How did they react?
They're probably licking their lips in the parade ring. But, look, you know, Archie come out and done his stuff and... made us and all of Australia proud.
Hey, was there a Shannon Perry moment with the betting shops in England with you? Like, the great story of Schwarzier is that Shannon Perry, who loved to punt, was just destroying all the betting shops around the town of Newmarket in England, and then Schwarzier came out and won both in the same week, and he's still counting it. Did you have a... Do you remember what odds takeover target was that first year, the first year he won?
Yeah, I think he might have been somewhere about $4.50, $6. And look, don't worry, we got a decent drink out of him, especially the conversion rate back then. But I think the famous story about Shannon a couple of years prior, that one of the guys that organised the trips for us over there and makes sure we got everything we need, they tell me that he covered his desk and his office full of money. So Shannon definitely got a decent drink.
He did. What was the experience like? Because I've never been to Royal Ascot, and I know some people catch the train up from London, and some people hang closer to the track, and there's always a lovely car park party afterwards and so on. And then you are attached to one of the hero horses of Royal Ascot. What was the personal experience like for you and your dad?
Yeah, look, it is the biggest thing going over there. It is, you know, as big as Wimbledon. You know, when they call it the Royal Meeting, you know, everybody really does sort of, you know, look forward to it all year. You know, it's a huge event over there.
And of course, the wins in Singapore and Japan. I think sometimes people forget that he won in these places. And arguably, the best field he might have beaten was in Japan.
Silent witness.
Yeah, mate, you're spot on. If anyone was to ask me what his best win was, by far, Japan sits on top. You know, you only got to look at the replay. And, like, we had Silent Witness off the bridle at the 800 there. We just had that horse absolutely flying over there. Horse acclimatised fantastic and just didn't put a foot wrong all prep and just went so smooth and obviously come out and done exactly what we thought he'd do.
Ben, the actual experience at Royal Ascot, today you go to Rose Hill, they run 10. At Royal Ascot, they'll run half that. They'll run 5. Which would you prefer?
Might always prefer to take on the 5.
Short and sweet. Hey, just take us through Takeover. I know he's died, but when was that? And how's the old man going? And what are you up to these days?
Yeah, look, the old man's good. He's had a few little health concerns over the last few years, but we think we're on top of it now. And he spent a lot of time up at his partner's place up on the Sunshine Coast at Maroochydore, so getting a bit of sun on his back up there.
How old would Joe be now?
74, I think, off the top of my head.
Is he still a bit grumpy?
Mate, depends if he's got a drink in front of him.
Grumpy with a drink or grumpy without a drink?
he's going well, Joseph.
No, he's quite a character. And obviously Takeover Target's no longer with us, but I think you're married or you have a partner and you're up on the Gold Coast. You've got some units and so on, and I think you're about to rekindle your trainer's licence. Is that right?
Yeah, spot on, mate. Me and my beautiful wife, Shara, mate, we're up on the Gold Coast. We've been up here, I think, 6 years now, and we've got we own some management rights to some holiday apartments in Broadbeach, and that's going well, and sort of got the business to the point now where a few of the boys have been at me to go and get relicensed. So we bought our first horse at the Millions last year, and I've been back out the track for about 12 months now and just loving every minute of it. It's just been fantastic.
You know, the first horse you bought at the Millions, were you trying to think of the ingredients of Takeover Target and work out if any of them connected to this yearling?
No, not at all.
So that's going to be a path. It's almost like flying to the moon and now you're trying to get to Mars. I mean, it's nearly an impossibility. So what's the drive there? Is it a sense of achievement where you can enjoy that next phase of your life with training horses and not necessarily, you know, strive to repeat that? I suppose a horse half as good is going to be a damn good horse.
With 3 million, a horse half as good.
Yeah, look, you'd be a foolish bloke to think that, you know, I'm ever going to replicate what we've done. But look, it's you know, I go out there every day and it's all about getting results for the ownership group, no matter where I am or what I'm doing. But the reason I'm back out there is just, you know, purely for the love of training and being around the horse. You know, I've been at the stables, you know, my whole life, grew up at the stables, and it's just a passion that I'll always have.
What's the one greatest memory of your association with Takeover Target, whether it was to do with the relationship with your dad, the horse itself, Jay, who we're going to listen to a little clip from as well, Jay Ford? If there's one memory that rises above the others for that era of your life, what would it be?
Well, I mean, if you look at it performance-wise, I think the time away that we had, especially the cultural aspects in Japan, and also went in the Sprinter Stakes over there in a field like that, I think that probably sits on top. But as far as memories, I mean, geez, we met some great people, not only all around the world, but in all the different states that we travelled to in Australia, and, you know, mates I'll have forever and, you know, cherish that dearly.
Maybe your old man could start up a training partnership with Betty Windsor. You know, they seem to get on. They seem to have the same ideas about training. She's got ages to go. She could hang in for a while. Hey, mate, as we let you go, I'm just going to hang on the line because we just want to play a little excerpt of a chat we had with Jay Ford this morning about what it felt like to ride Takeover Target. Hey, thanks for your time, mate. Best of luck with the big wet up there and hope that yearling you purchased at the Gold Coast turns out to be another Takeover Target.
Good on you, boys. Have a good day.
Here's Jay Ford this morning.
Yeah, well, he felt like a rocket. Obviously, he wasn't the smoothest going horse when you're sort of just trotting and cantering, but when he was in full flight and galloping, that was the best, when he felt at his best. But like you said, he always looked burly. He always had a hairy coat on him. You know, it gets quite cold in Queanbeyan. So, but like you said, he always raced with condition. He was just a little nuggety bulldog sort of a horse that, I think his greatest attribute was his will to win. You know, he just had that, he had a massive heart. He knew where the line was. He was a winner and he didn't always win by the biggest of margins, but it took a good horse to get past him because he didn't like horses getting past him.
There you go, Ben. Is Jay Ford Benjamin Button? He still sounds about 15. He's gone. Benny's gone to look after his units and train his horse. That was, it's amazing how time flies down, isn't it? 13 years ago since Takeover Target.
But just to recap on the wins this horse has had all across Australia in virtually every feature sprint race that is in this country, but to then go to a number of other countries and beat the best in Asia, and the Japan race, as we've mentioned, was probably the strongest sprinting field anywhere in the world for a number of years at that time, and then to conquer Royal Ascot, but also with the consistency of going back there. If they do make a movie, I'm thinking of all the BAFTAs and Academy Awards that have been won with the, you know, revolving around the Queen. So if she's got some sort of a cameo in this film, I think there's every chance it'll go all the way. It could remind me of that movie Dreamer. Do you remember the movie Dreamer about the horse that was purchased as a claimer and then ends up winning the Breeders' Cup? So I reckon it'll be a movie like that because it's certainly a rags to riches story. Almost a National Velvet without the jumps.
Absolutely.
Has the text come through and said, well, Japan and Queen being very similar, they're both freezing.
Yeah, indeed.